Welcome to My First Concert. Dave Lee here with Breanne. Breanne, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, I'm excited about our guest here, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. We are on the Talk North Podcast Network, and you can download these podcasts anywhere you get all your podcasts. It could be Apple. It could be Spotify. You know all of those spots. So we encourage you to subscribe, and we want to thank the folks at Propane, the environmentally friendly energy for everyone, making all of this possible. I bring in an old friend. And a rock and roller and a guy that's got a lot of great concert stories, been to a lot of different venues and played a lot of different music, a broadcast journalist of note, the award-winning Steve Simpson. Stever, how are you?
Good, Daver. How are you? It's great to be here. Thank you so much for the invite.
Yeah, we were kidding because they used to call, Breanne, they used to call Steve Stever, and when I was at concert age, for some reason, once I got to college, I was the Daver. Don't know why.
How clever.
So you got Steve and the Daver here today. And Steve, what's interesting, not only with all of your experience, and you've been to a lot of Broadway, a lot of rock and roll, a lot of different venues, but at one time before you became a broadcast journalist, you were spinning the discs at an oldie station, weren't you?
I was. That was probably in my DJ career, if you will. That was probably the longest I spent at a format. I was here for about 5 or 6 years in Indianapolis. It was a really good radio station. And of course, all of the music, I was in my late 20s, early 30s at that time. All of this music was before I was around or in my very early memories of it. You know, it was like 50, because the oldies at that time were, you know, 55 to about 73 or 74. What it gave me the opportunity to do was interview and just be around a lot of these folks we'd bring in for concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And after your invite to me, I started thinking about all of those folks that we had just at those oldies concerts and my one-on-one conversations I had with these people. And it was pretty cool, like to the point where I was thinking, I might want to start writing some of this stuff down because I'm going to forget it, because I forgot until I started, like, sat down and thought about all of these groups we had, because we had these oldies concerts where we had three or four groups together, right? And they, you know, just switch out. And man, it's just been fun to think about over the last couple of days. So,
well, I'm convinced this is therapeutic in a good way. But let me go back to the title of the show, obviously. Your first concert, do you remember what it was, who it was?
Yeah, it's so lame now, looking back on it, because I was 9 years old. But I remember this. I was taken with my friend's parents, I grew up outside of Philadelphia, took us to the Valley Forge Music Fair. It was a theater in the round, and we saw the Carpenters. I know, it's lame. But now that I look back on it, it's kind of cool because it's like, you know, she died a few years after that.
Yes.
And they were iconic. I mean, at the time, they were huge. This was right at the height of their
thing. Oh, they were big.
You know?
Bigger than big. Yeah.
And I was a kid, and I think they were the first people that I remember seeing that I thought were celebrities, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I was there. And so as a kid, it was cool to be there. So that really was the first concert I saw.
Oh, yeah.
And then my first real concert, the one that I fess up to if somebody asks me this.
Yeah, this is just between us.
Right,
yeah,
right. The concert that was actually, this is actually really cool. I was in high school, Bruce Springsteen, at the Spectrum in Philadelphia.
And what do you remember about it? Do you remember who you went with?
Yeah, I went with my friend Donna Andre and a girl named Ruth, and I can't remember her last name, and my friend Mike. It was the four of us that went.
See, we remember these things,
totally,
don't we?
And they were bigger fans of Springsteen at the time that I was. I was still a big fan because, again, growing up in Philadelphia, Springsteen's from Jersey. That's your soundtrack. Like, that's when you go to the Jersey Shore, that's the music, you know, Springsteen is it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had that obvious connection to it. But then getting there and all of the talk I heard about, wait till you see this concert, it's all energy from start to finish, and he plays for 4 hours or whatever it was. And it was all true. Like, sometimes you get into concerts like that and and it's like, ooh, is this going to live up to the hype? Because the hype was huge when I went to this.
Yeah.
And it lived up to the hype, I got to say. I walked out of there just like shaking my head like, wow, that was cool.
You know, that's a good show when that happens. Because even in Broadway productions, which you and I are both fans of, I always hope I see a show before I read too much about it. Because then I'm just expecting everything. And it's rarely does it seem to live up to what you anticipated to
Absolutely.
Do.
And so, yeah, that was high school. Probably a senior, maybe a junior in high school, but a senior. And that was also a big deal because all four of us went to Philadelphia. I lived in the suburbs, so that was like a thing to go down. It was like the first concert that we went to as kids that our parents didn't have to be with us. You know what I mean? So that it was an event. And so that's my first vivid memory of that type of a concert.
Yeah. And you remember who you went with, which is the cool part.
Yep.
Do you remember any of the songs?
I remember Thunder Road as being like the one that just stuck with me. And I don't know why. I mean, I heard it on an album before, but there was something about it that in concert, in real life, seeing it was just amazing, and kind of that experience that you get at concerts sometimes where it's like, oh my, that's the song that I heard and now I'm seeing it live and he's singing it. And it was just hard to describe, but that was one of those aha moments for me.
Yeah. So now when you hear Thunder Road,
it takes me back. Right back to that seat at the Spectrum in Philadelphia that isn't even there anymore. You know, they knocked it down.
But the coolest things.
Yeah, for sure.
I just saw the Spectrum on the Showtime series.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. And Winning Time, right?
Winning Time with the Lakers. Yeah. And they're playing the 76ers at the Spectrum. Yeah. So we talk about these first concerts. And then, Steve, it leads me to think about a big concert. Sometimes we were invited to a concert or there's a huge concert in town. And we just, I don't know if I'm going to go. You had one of those moments. Can you tell us about that?
I was in college, Syracuse University.
Yeah, I get the feeling he doesn't want to tell us, Brianne, but he's going to.
Well, it was all made good later in my life, but at the time, and so my roommate at the time, he says, hey, a few of us are going to get tickets to see Prince. He's playing the Carrier Dome in Syracuse. And at that time, I had just gotten a job working like overnight Friday and Saturday nights at a quote unquote real radio station in Syracuse.
Been there, done that. Was that while you were a student?
Yeah, I went to school for, so I got this, and I think I was like taking a cab out there. So whatever money I was making at the radio station, I was paying the cab driver at the time. So I wasn't making anything. It was not.
Right, but it was the experience.
But I told him, I said, oh no, what day is it? It's a Friday night. Oh no, I can't go. I've got to do radio. And I'm working like midnight to six on an AM radio station that even then I was like, nobody's paying attention to me. But doggone it, there I was, and I missed it. And, of course, years later, it wasn't even years later. It was maybe a year later. I looked back on that and thought, what am I doing? I could have taken the night off.
You could have.
Take the night
you
off.
You could have.
What am I doing?
Yeah.
But the good news is, years later, I was covering the Indianapolis Colts. I was living in Indianapolis, and the Colts got to the Super Bowl.
Oh, sure.
And the Super Bowl was in Miami, and they were playing the Chicago Bears. And I don't know if you heard, but Prince played the halftime concert at the Super Bowl, and I was there. So, check.
Did you go to the press conference, too, then?
I went to the press conference, which was one of the coolest experiences, honestly, of my life. So, we're at the press conference, and it was, I think, Billy Joel played the national anthem or whatever beforehand. Whatever. So, they have these press conference. It was at the Miami Civic Center or whatever. And they bring him out. So Billy Joel's there. He's talking. We're asking just these regular questions that dopey media people ask at these things. but they had like a curtain behind him. And there was like something going on behind the curtain. And we were like, I wonder what's happening back there. And I remember being with a guy from WBBM in Chicago. We're both standing there. And I'm like, do you think Prince is going to play or do something here? And he's like, I don't know. There's something weird going on back there. So anyway, Billy Joel gets up and leaves. And next thing you know, they take the curtains down, and sure enough, there's like a drum kit there, and it's like, well, something's happening. And we waited and waited and waited, nothing. So finally, they came out and introduced Prince, who walked out with his background singers and whatever, and with his guitar, and I'm like, oh my God, he's gonna play. So I ran to the front, and I had BlackBerry. And a BlackBerry phone at the time.
Deep track.
Yeah, right. and so I got down, and I said, I'm going to shoot some video on my BlackBerry.
great quality.
So, it looks like the Zapruder film. honestly, it's
in a fire, you can't even get off
terrible.
Your phone.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. But anyway, so sure enough, he comes out, and he plays like three or four songs, which you can now find on YouTube. And I'm standing like from me almost to you. I mean, we're just a few feet from him, and I'm watching Prince. Now, this is a big deal for me. Because he was in my wheelhouse when I was in college, man. He was it. And to see him that close and to see him just do this, and then he left, and it was awesome. And then I thought, well, that was cool enough. And then when he played what became the greatest halftime show in the history of all halftime shows, and I was there for that with the rain, it was remarkable.
It was karma.
It was. And so I made up for missing that concert in the early 80s, whatever year that was when I missed that one.
But when you're in a press conference, I mean, granted, Super Bowl, there's a lot of people, but it's still kind of private, right?
Totally. Yes, yeah. It was very intimate, you know. And again, I just barged my way right to the front and knelt down. And I still have the video, which is just hilarious because it looks like the Zapruder film. I mean, it's grainy and it's weird and the sound is awful, but it's mine.
It's yours.
And I shot it and I know that I was there. That's the proof that I was there, you know? So yeah, it was really cool.
That's the reason he stayed in audio, then went to radio full time. Said, I'm not going to make it as a camera guy here.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Well, Prince too. Yeah. Big show there. Then when you were at Syracuse, you had some other ones you went to.
Man. Well, that was the thing. Cause, you know, like so many of us, we'd have to sleep out for tickets, you know, and there were lines outside of the Carrier Dome, like I said, and sometimes it was in the wintertime or sometimes it was in the early spring when it was wet or windy or whatever. Sometimes if they felt sorry for us, they'd move us inside to the concourse inside the dome, but some, you know.
Not often.
A couple of days, you know, some people would sit outside for a couple of days. So I had some amazing, I saw some amazing concerts, you know, David Bowie. Duran Duran.
Oh, I never saw David Bowie. I wish
Bowie
I had.
It was unbelievable.
He was so talented. I mean, he was a business mind. And
he had like three incarnations, and this was the Modern Love China Girl tour, right? So, and this was when he was dressing sharp. And the thing I remember about that concert was he had like two or three, maybe more wardrobe changes. And that's not something you saw with men.
No.
You know, like Cher, like I saw Cher, and Cher, that's a thing. You know, you change costume several times, but he'd walk off stage and then come back with a different suit on. And it was, oh wow, he just had a wardrobe. And it was really cool. And he was so fashion forward, you know, he was always really sharp. He, not unlike Prince, I would suggest, had a real impact on not only clothing, but also the way in which people are allowed to wear clothing. Like even during his Ziggy Stardust days with that kind of androgynous look that he had, that was kind of embraced by so many people, not that they would necessarily wear it for themselves, but there was kind of an open mind that took place with
that they thought it was cool.
That it became cool, right? And so getting dressed up in that like nice fitting suit, that was cool and it was sharp and he was up there. And again, that's what he wore on the video, you know, the Modern Love or China Girl, maybe both of them. But yeah, so like Prince, he was kind of like that. He kind of had a real impact on fashion.
I'd say for sure Prince and David Bowie are kind of more pinnacles of exactly what you said. But I read in an article recently that the 80s was a very interesting time because art, music, and all other kinds of influence as far as art, you know, how it goes into other spheres, really worked together to create kind of a theme. And that's what, or more so of a almost like a color palette and just a overall kind of arching. It they said it hasn't happened since or before, and it was kind of all the mechanisms worked together in concert to really create kind of just a decade unlike any other.
I think that's fascinating. I'd never thought of it in that way, but you're absolutely right. I think that is spot on. I think that was the difference. You know, a lot of people like to bust in the 80s, whatever. Everybody busts on whatever decade that they don't necessarily represent or were a part of, you know.
Yes, very much so.
The 60s, the 60s, long hair, you know, whatever. So everybody has that. But I think that's true. And Prince was certainly a pinnacle of that, no question about it. And like I said, I think David Bowie was.
You know who else I think about too, maybe not at that level, but who was kind of like the Robert Palmer.
Yes.
Yes.
I think it's absolutely true. Yep, that's another good one.
Duran Duran, how was that?
That's actually great. They opened for David Bowie.
What a show.
Yeah. They opened for David Bowie. It was great.
Had they done the Bond song at that point? No, they hadn't.
No. It was right at the beginning. That was kind of their height.
Right, you know, when they're starting, yeah.
Hungry. I saw at the Onondaga County War Memorial Culture Club in the 80s, which, again, that whole kind of art fashion thing that we were just talking about. Now you've got me on that. I'm driving down that road and I'm thinking about all those types of groups.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
It totally does, yeah.
How good were they? I mean, I'm guessing that was a good sound.
That was a really good sound. That was Motown. If you listen to Culture Club, that was Motown, man. That was Motown influenced. That was kind of funky and kind of, you know, a little R&B in there.
Soulful.
It was fresh.
Very soulful. And you know, who opened for them was Jay Giles Band, who was this little known band from Boston at the time. And yeah, they opened for Culture Club.
Jay Giles
band. At the Onondaga County War Memorial. And again, this was what, early 80s? This was like 81, 82. And at the height of Culture Club, and Jay Giles was just starting. I think they had the one song out, which was, I think, Centerfold was their first one. Whichever one it was one or the other. But
well, you talk about those opening acts. Who'd we say Taylor Swift opened for before we knew who Taylor Swift was?
Rascal Flatts.
Rascal Flatts. Yeah. She was out there opening and doing a short set and was kind of going,
yeah, for sure.
Hey, wait a minute. She's pretty good. If you took the time to go see the opening act.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Gosh, I'm trying to think of some others. The Police were great in concert.
Never seen them in concert.
Yeah, they were great. Saw them again. So many of these were at the Caradome just because that's where I was living and going to school and whatever. And
I was there for a football game one
time. That's where, yeah, yeah. Played football and basketball in there and concerts. So one time I was going to my disc jockey job. This was actually the disc jockey job in the bar that I had. And I walked there to Marshall Street in Syracuse. And my dorm was right next to the Carrier Dome. And I'm walking down the street with my arm full of records that I was going to play in the bar that night. And this woman was standing on the corner and there was a concert going on in the Carrier Dome. And it was Van Halen was playing in the Carrier Dome. And so I'm standing there and it was kind of snowy a little bit. And this woman was standing there and she looked a little bit out of place and like she didn't know. So I kind of looked and I said, hi. And she said, hi. And I started walking across the street and I turned around and I went back and I said, you're Valerie Bertinelli. And she looked at me. And of course, what do you say? She says, yes, I am. I said, why are you standing in the snow? And she says, I'm waiting for my husband who's playing over there. I said, I know, but you could probably get inside. And she laughed and said, I actually don't mind it. I don't see snow that much. And I said, okay, well, it's really nice to meet you. And off I went. So yes, that was one of those, wait a minute, I think I know who she is. So yeah, Valerie Bertinelli waiting for her husband, then husband at the time.
And Brianne, what I'm thinking about is I'm picturing this guy carrying his LPs, his albums, the pride of his life, because when you're a college student, it's like you had certain things that were valuable. Albums were like, there's a fire, save the albums. But it wasn't, you weren't walking down with digital downloads.
No.
So it was a task.
Yeah. No, I had my whole armful of albums that I was going to go play in the bar that I worked at that night. And I had all these 12-inch discs, these dance remixes and stuff. And they were all mine.
God forbid somebody scratched those with a bad needle.
Yeah, that is not good. That would not be good.
When did you change your stylus? You're not going to listen to these until you get a new stylus.
Exactly.
Hey, I want to thank the folks at Propane for bringing this show with us. More with Steve and Brianne here in just a minute. This is the environmentally friendly energy for everyone. And we're all well aware of reducing carbon emissions right now. It's a good thing. I'm not sure we all know how we reduce those emissions and yet meet the increasing energy needs we have in this world. So propane is something for you to think about. This is an excellent way to reduce emissions and yet meet the energy needs that we have today. So propane, if you don't know a lot about it, it's a clean, non-toxic energy source that helps reduce carbon emissions right now. We've talked about propane's carbon intensity score on this podcast before, and you're saying, well, I don't know what that is. But even if you don't know, listen to the numbers. This kind of gives you an idea how clean it is. Propane's carbon intensity score in Minnesota is only 80. Grid electricity, which you know about in Minnesota, including wind and solar, which you're well aware about, has a much higher carbon intensity score of 136. So you probably didn't know. Who knew that using propane was that much cleaner than electricity? And then you have this abundance of propane, which is great. And the growth of renewable propane means we have generations yet to come that should be able to use this. So millions of Americans rely on propane to heat their homes and businesses right now. Fuel vehicles, on-road, and yes, off-road, much more. It all makes propane the right energy right now. So I'd find out more about what propane can do for you and the environment by going to propane.com. Steve Simpson is our guest. He's a award-winning broadcast journalist and, of course, a fellow music hound here as well with some great stories through the years. Brianne is with us as always, a producer of this podcast. And Steve, we talk about a lot of the bands and the concerts. But I do want to ask you, I want to go back to your oldies days and some of those bands. Among some of the people that you had a chance to interview and meet.
My gosh, I was thinking about this over the last couple of days. John Sebastian and the Love and Spoonful, Little Anthony and the Imperials, Lou Christie, Bobby V, the Vogues, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas.
Oh, I used to have a crush on her.
Here's a funny story about her. So, we're doing one of these concerts, and she and the Vandellas were there, and my sister, for some reason, she went to the Art Institute of Chicago, and she came down to visit in Indianapolis that weekend when we were having this concert. I don't know if it was for the concert or whatever, but so, you know, I'm a disc jockey with the radio station. So we're kind of quote unquote backstage and just kind of hanging out waiting for the show to start. And all of a sudden a door opens in one of the dressing rooms. And this woman says, "Can somebody help me?" And my sister looks and says, "Yeah, what do you need?" And kind of walks toward her and has this conversation with Martha Reeves. And my sister comes back and says, "I've got to go buy Martha Reeves pantyhose." Martha Reeves got a runner in her pantyhose.
Oh, no.
And so literally my sister said, "Give me your keys." There you go. And she went to the CVS in Broad Ripple and bought her a pair of pantyhose. So, of course, anytime from that point forward, anytime she and I, my sister and I, have ever been together and Martha Reeves is on the radio or whatever, the story is, "Hey, remember that time I bought Martha Reeves pantyhose?"
In, of course, Broad Ripple.
In Broad Ripple, Indianapolis, right? So, yeah.
It sounds like what happened to the pantyhose, Broad Ripple.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
I had a chance to, and that was a cool thing about that, because when I was a disc jockey and we brought these groups in, we could like be at rehearsal and just hang out with them. We could go backstage. And I was of an age where I wasn't like a fanboy about it, like I because it wasn't my music per se. Like I was playing it, but I was once removed from it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't starstruck by it, but I was fascinated by it. So that helped me to be able to have these conversations with them and not be intimidated. I remember sitting after one of our shows with Jay Traynor of Jay and the Americans, or it was one of the Jays, because they had a couple of Jays. I think it was Jay Traynor, but John Sebastian of the Lovin' Spoonful. We sat at a bar at a table about this size, maybe five or six of us, and a couple of us disc jockeys, and we were just throwing questions. Well, what was it like doing this? And what was it like doing that? And they just talked, you know, we just had a conversation. Yeah. It was not on the radio. It was just for me, you know, and I had so many opportunities to do that stuff. I was talking to Little Anthony. I talked to him, Little Anthony and the Imperials and
rock history.
Just, yeah. I mean, and again, so many times when, you know, one of these people unfortunately pass away or whatever, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. And it's like, oh yeah, I met them. I remember that, you know, and it's just, it was a really cool experience. Again, it wasn't quote unquote my music, but I was enough of a fan of the music and enough of kind of a historian, if you will. I got it. That I just some really, really great, great memories. Freddie Boom Boom Cannon was wow, one. You know, Freddie Palisades Park,
sure.
Song that was written by Chuck Barris of The Gong Show. He wrote that song, so I talked to him about that. Hey, what was Chuck Barris? How did you get that song? You know, it was just a fascinating time in my life. Again, I was a kid. I was in my late 20s. You know, playing these songs that preceded me by 20 years, but I had so many opportunities to meet, you know, some really, really interesting people. The Mamas and Papas. Now, Michelle Phillips wasn't touring with them, but Mackenzie was, Papa John's daughter, of course, who I knew from the sitcom One Day at a Time.
Sure.
And so they were there, and I had an opportunity to ask John Phillips, and again, that was like, to me, that was legendary. Like, my parents had his album. Like, I saw him with his silly hat on that he always wore, you know? and I had heard a story about the song "I Saw Her Again Last Night." And in that song...
Great song.
It's fantastic. It's my favorite Mom and Papa song. In that song, they stop and start again. I saw her again. And I had heard that was a mistake, and they left it in. So I got a chance to ask him to his face, "Hey, I got to ask you about I Saw Her Again Last Night." And he said, "It was a mistake." And I said, "Good. So I can go with it." He said, "Yeah, that was a mistake." He said, "I get asked that a lot, especially by," he didn't say nerds, but something along the lines of like music
he made
nerds.
It nice.
He made it nice. But yeah, so I was, that was cool. I was literally able to ask him that question because it is one of my favorite, you know, Mamas and Papas song. And to have him tell that story, you know, it was cool that it was a mistake and they just kept rolling with it. And when they got done, the producer's like, "Hey, that sounded pretty cool." And they said, "Let's just keep it in."
You mentioned John Sebastian. It made me think, I read Mick Fleetwood's book from Fleetwood Mac, which I really enjoyed reading. But he talked about a concert. I think this was in his book. He talked about a concert for all the other rock and rollers. I think they were in Ireland, like in a castle or some. For some reason, they were all together. Maybe it was an award show. But they had booked John Sebastian and the Lovin' Spoonful to come in and entertain the entertainers.
Oh,
can you imagine that pressure?
Yeah.
So you're going over to this, you know, well, the British rock and roll was the thing, right? So Mick Fleetwood is there, and they said they booked John Sebastian. Everybody, if I remember the book right, I don't have it with me, but I have it at home. But he said, you know, John Sebastian performing for this group, we're all thinking, eh. And he said he got done, and we're all shaking our heads going, wow.
Really?
How good were they? I mean, like, really super talented. They had no clue.
Yep.
And I have to go back and reread that again. So you talked to John Sebastian, who's kind of saw it all in rock and roll.
And that was kind of the fun part, again, during that oldies time in my life, was that it seemed like everybody you talked to, there were so many tentacles of the music of that day. If they weren't at Woodstock, they were invited to it, or they knew somebody who was there, or there was some connection. You know what I mean? Like, it was that sort of thing. They were all in it together. It seems like at that time, you know, given perhaps where the country was or whatever, but there just seemed to be those rock and roll groups. They all had some sort of a connection somehow.
Yeah.
And they could tell fantastic stories about, oh, you remember that time when we were with so-and-so and this happened and we were playing a concert with this group and, you know, whatever. And that's what was just so fun and interesting to me as a kid who was playing this music that preceded me by 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
But it was really good. You know who's a really interesting student of music that I realized after I saw him on that? Bob Costas had his late night show years ago on NBC, which I used to love. John Bon Jovi is really, really a student of oldies and music in general.
I did not know that.
Well, I had a chance. I actually introduced him in Syracuse.
For the concert?
For the concert.
Oh, my.
That's when I was a rock and roll disc jockey for a brief time.
Were you allowed to say much? Ladies and gentlemen, John Bon Jovi.
Yeah, it was like, put your hands together. You know, it was that. It was that typical thing.
Yeah.
And it was during their Slippery, they right at the height of
their...
They
were red hot.
You know, they were huge.
Still are.
And we had a listener meet and greet backstage and had a chance to meet the entire band, Richie Sambora, everybody. And what I was struck by when I met them, and again, it was a brief 5-minute conversation at that, was just how down to earth they were and how they, you know, because I've met some that are kind of like, you know, get out of my way. Bothering me, you know.
No doubt.
That was not the case with these guys. I was struck by that, and I remember that to this day. But what I regret was, after seeing him on Costas's show, how I wish I would have known that about him when I met him, because I would have loved to have picked his brain about his influences on me, you know, because I realized, wow, he really knows his music. He really knows the history. He understands who influenced whom and what influenced him. And I just thought it was a terrific interview. And my regret was I didn't have that opportunity to sit down like I did with some of these others and, you know, just pick his brain, you know.
Just to give you 10, 15 minutes and we'll be buddies. I'll just...
Exactly.
I remember, John Bon Jovi made me think about this. So after I'd get off my shift, I go work out about 9:30 in the morning at this club, the Grand Hotel. It was a Lifetime Fitness at the time. I think it's switched ownership now.
Yep.
But I'd go over there and get a little workout in. Nothing impressive, just to keep the ticker going, basically. And I'm working out upstairs. It's just me. Nobody else there. And who comes up? And I didn't even dawn on me that they were in town for two shows. I look in the mirror and I see this guy, a little guy with a hat on, and he's kind of keeping his head down. I'm like the only guy in there, and there's 8,000 machines, you know, and he's kind of looking around, and it's John Bon Jovi. So I ended up chatting with him briefly, you know, showing him how to lift heavy weights.
Yeah, sure.
This is how I squat 14,000 pounds right here. Yeah. So it might have been 20.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, 14,000, 20.
20, what the heck?
It's in the ballpark.
But he was there, Sambora was there, and the other band member, whose name I escaped me,
who I can never remember either.
But they were there working out, and they like to go. Apparently, first of all, I was impressed. You know, they did a concert the night before. They're all up at that time,
yeah,
you know, working out and staying in shape, obviously taking care of themselves. And one of my friends over there that ran things over there, I said, you're not gonna believe what I bumped into and talked a little. We had a brief conversation with him and Sambora. They were very nice,
yeah,
and very cordial. But he said, they are great people to work with. He said Bon Jovi kind of takes care of business. And
yep,
he watches everything. And they said, but they like to go into the club and work out, but they kind of like to be there when no one is around.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then I'm sure they're checking to see if, you know, like a camera phone. Like, you know, like I'm going to start filming. But, you know, I'm sure people say, oh, there's Bon Jovi going to film his workout. They don't want that.
And it's really sad with him now because, you know, they tried to go on tour here recently and they're just getting torched by the critics and his voice is just shot. And it's too bad. You know what I mean? And it's sad. And he even knows it. Apparently there was a quote recently that I just read over the last week or so that he said, I just can't do it anymore. Well, he's been screaming for 30 years. You know, it just happens, right? So, but back in the day, man, they were a thing. Yeah. I mean, they were a thing.
Well, all I know is they couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah, me too.
He could not have been nicer people.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a fun part. The other one you mentioned, and you made me think and I'm thinking this happened at the Grand Hotel as well. So I walk outside after my shift, and Steve and I worked together, Breanne, for a number of years. And I don't know where it was, but it was probably 10:30 in the morning. And Jack White is standing against the wall waiting for a ride. And I was at the Twins game the night before the baseball game. And it wasn't his team is Detroit, but it was somebody else. But he likes baseball, so Jack was at the game. And I sat real close to him. I didn't bother him. I don't know who knew who he was or not. But then I saw him, and I saw him. Hey, I said, how'd you like the game last night? Oh, you were there? I said, yeah. I said, where were we sitting? Why didn't you come over? I'm thinking, I would have. And you wouldn't have gotten rid of me. I'd been like a bad cold, man. You wouldn't have gotten rid of me.
Right.
But you made me think of it because you talk about the thing. I wish I'd asked him like you wish you had asked Bon Jovi. And that was his relationship with Dylan. I had wished that we had – because we had it was a quick conversation, I suppose, 10, 15 minutes, and then his ride came. Nicest guy in the world, and we talked some baseball and Detroit things, but I wish I had talked to him about – he's got one of those relationships with Bob Dylan. I don't know how many people have a relationship like he does, and I really wanted to get into the, you know, with some Dylan stuff because he's a Minnesotan.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so those are great moments that are big to us.
Right.
But you wonder if I think Jack White remembers talking to me or Bon Jovi remembers talking. No, I don't think so.
Right.
But to us, it's part of our maturation growing up.
Absolutely. And you know, it's something I'll always remember is these times when I've been able to sit down and talk to these people. And I also don't remember the ones that perhaps didn't have time for me, right? It's the people that had time for me that I remember. And I learned so much from so many of these people that I had this opportunity. And again, you know, I just lucked into this. I have nothing to do with any of this. This was just my job, and it just was really cool for me for many years. You just brought up one thing. You know, I didn't talk about all of the big acts that, you know, we've all seen, the Rolling Stones, and I saw Paul McCartney, and, you know, over the years, whatever. But so many of these acts that we would have as these oldies acts, they had connections to these large acts, too. You know, oh, we were touring with the Rolling Stones or, you know, whatever. Or I remember when I saw Mick Jagger at so-and-so, or McCartney and I were da-da-da, you know. And they weren't dropping names. They literally were just telling their story, right? It was just, and you realize that, okay, even though I'm sitting with this guy who wasn't as big as the Rolling Stones, he's got connections to all of these groups that everybody knows. And once you play a song or two from these people, everybody knows these songs too. They're a part of so many people's. The other, I just have to say, and I know Eric Escala mentioned his first concert was Elton John, I think he said the other day on your podcast. I've seen Elton John 3 times, and truly one of the best concerts I've ever seen.
Oh, I believe it.
Just fantastic. Yeah. Just absolutely fantastic.
I talked to Jack Larson on this podcast, and Jack is responsible for the acts over at the Xcel Energy Center. You know, he helps.
Yep.
He obviously runs the place, but had been booking backs for many, many, many years before he was even there. And I told him, I said, I've seen Elton John several times. I said, I thought this last tour, this final tour, I said, it's been my favorite. I said, I thought this was one of his best. And I don't think I was expecting one of his best.
Yeah, because normally that doesn't happen, right? That's
Bingo.
Not the trajectory of acts. And that's fine. I mean, that happens to the best of us, right? But no, I saw him. The last time I saw him was at Caesar's Palace when he was doing his residency there. So that was a pretty fairly small venue, right?
And great sound, I can
just
imagine.
Great sound. But the coolest time I saw him was it was a fundraiser for the Ryan White Foundation.
In Indianapolis.
In Indianapolis. This was about 10 or 12 years ago.
He was very close, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Bought Jeannie a house. You know, after they had to move and so on and so forth. So it was, and in fact, he credits Ryan White with getting him sober. Because he says without Ryan White, he would not have gotten sober. Of course, the first child we knew of that had AIDS, and it was a huge story. But about 10, 12 years ago, I went to this what was cool about it was just him on stage. There was nobody else. And he had this kind of thing that he worked his feet worked this box that was like playing like kind of background stuff, but it was him playing his piano, and he just did a concert. And then Judith Light would come out, who played Jeannie Grinder on the miniseries or whatever. And Phil Donahue was there, and you know, all of these people that were connected to Ryan White. But what I loved about that, and what I remember about that, was unlike the other two times I saw him in a big, you know, in a venue, this was such a personal thing, because he was singing about this kid that he loved and that he credits with getting him sober and his life changed. And you could tell there was an emotion. And when you think about music, when I think about music, isn't that what we're looking for? We're looking for that emotion. And as much as I love like getting up and dancing to I'm Still Standing or whatever, it was cool to watch him like really like just let himself just sink into that moment of this concert that he was doing for his young friend who died and who made such an impact in his life. That was awesome. That was really, really just and I get like goosebumps thinking about it. That was just a really cool moment that I had, that again, I didn't bargain for. I had no idea was going
to
happen.
You get to bear witness kind of to it.
Right. It was almost like I was just kind of watching him. He was doing the show for us, but he wasn't really doing the show for us. You could tell that it was a personal, he was doing that for somebody or something else. And I just happened to be watching it. And that's a good way to put it. That's how I felt watching that concert. It was really amazing.
Well, you've seen a lot of them through the years.
I have. I've been pretty lucky, man.
But it's a passion. And that's why I love doing the podcast. These are just fun. I mean, they make you feel good.
They
got enough stuff that makes us not feel good.
No, that's right. And since we've been in contact, and I swear I've been thinking about this, and oh yeah, I met them, and oh yeah, that concert, and it reminds you then of other stuff that happened at the concert. You know, sometimes you want to talk about it, and sometimes you don't.
Right.
to other people. But that's okay too. That's part of it, right?
That's part of it. What's the best Broadway musical you've ever seen?
Oh, you know this,
I know the answer. I know it's going to be Hamilton, but let me ask anyway.
It's Hamilton.
I'm stunned.
It's not even close. It's Hamilton, and then it's everything else.
Well, you like the one, I can't think of the name now, the Canadian one.
From Away.
Thank you.
Yeah, Come From Away, which was a story of the planes that landed in Gander, Newfoundland during 9/11, and because they had to land all the planes out of the sky, and so it's that story. It's a fantastic musical. But Dave, getting back to Hamilton for just a minute, because everything comes back to Hamilton with me.
Well, now he's got the relative playing for the Twins.
That's exactly right. Jose Miranda. But no, you talk about a student of music. Lin-Manuel Miranda is a student of music. All of those songs in the entire Hamilton soundtrack are referencing other songs that happened before him. Rap and hip-hop and R&B, it's all part of it. And again, if you listen closely, you can say, oh, that's Biggie Small, that's this, that's that. And that's fun. As music nerds like I am, it was fun to hear that soundtrack for the very first time and say, oh, I see what he did with that. That's awesome.
I'm going to have to explore this more, but I think like America had some songs. Remember the band America?
Oh, yeah.
And their lyrics, I could never make sense of some of them. Like I've been in the desert on a horse
with no name.
And I'm going through some of the lyrics. I'm going, okay, I don't get that. So what does this mean? And then, of course, I'd read, oh, yeah, on the internet that it was about being on a certain drug and what you're seeing. And then America came out and said, no, we just looked for stuff that worked and rhymed and sounded good.
It sounded good.
And you're going, oh, no, I had this whole vision with this.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of music. You can decide what you want it to sound
like. Make it whatever you want it to sound like. And again, if you want to pay homage to it like Lin-Manuel Miranda did with Hamilton, that's what he does. He makes no bones about it. Yeah, this was absolutely, I was referencing this.
That's pretty cool.
In this lyric, yeah. So there's so much of that in that soundtrack.
I remember my buddy Harold Kane and I sitting on his front steps and the Sir Douglas Quintet.
Oh, yeah.
Had a song out. And we were, you know, because we may have been singing the lyrics. I'm not sure how it started, but it said, oh, she's about a mover. He said, she's about a mover? I said, yeah. It's beat about a bumpa. I said, what?
No.
No, I said, she's not. No, it's beat. We almost got into a fist fight. No, it's Bida Bada Bumpa. I'll never forget it. It was, you know, no, it isn't. But anyway, that, and that, you know, you, that's a whole different deal. Misinterpreting the lyrics.
Lyrics.
You know, I know there's books about it, but that legitimately happens.
Oh yeah,
sometimes,
it legitimately does.
As you know.
One other real quick one. I just thought of this one again, thinking about 10 years ago, I went to a horse track, a summer concert series where they had the Go-Go's and the B-52s. And again, this was 10 years ago. So this, but they were, again, right in my college wheelhouse.
Was Belinda Carlisle with them?
Yes.
Wow.
It was all, it was, it,
everybody
they
kind
of reconstituted and then they came back together. That was another fantastic concert. But when I walked into that concert, I'm looking around and I'm like, why are all these old people here? And honestly, that was my actual question in my head until I was like, wait a minute, they're all my age.
That's right. But they all look older than me. Yeah, yeah.
But I swear that actually went through my mind. And but that was a really fun concert too. I had not seen either one of them when they were in their heyday, but to see them later was really fun.
We went to Earth, Wind & Fire last week. And
love Earth, Wind & Fire.
And I had that same thing. I said to my wife, look at the crowd. This is like an older crowd. And I said, wait a minute. Yeah, exactly. And they were so good. Three of the original members still, including Philip Bailey.
Philip Bailey is there? Yeah.
They were so good. I couldn't get over that. How they sounded. It was really a fun night.
Never seen them. Would love to. One of my favorite songs is September.
Oh,
by Earth,
yeah.
Wind & Fire. It's one of my favorites of all time.
Yeah, there's nobody sitting down when they got into... Into that song. Yeah, but that's well worth your time.
Yeah.
Brianna, how are we doing on time? Are we okay? Or are we pretty much done here?
Way over.
No, there's no such thing as way over. But I think we've given the people a good chunk of some content.
Yeah. Well, Steve and I have talked about music before. I just really appreciate you coming over and being on the podcast. I just enjoyed the stories we're getting from other people. If there's someone along the line you want to share your story with us, then maybe we'll have you on as a guest. I don't know, but it's a commonality to pretty much everybody.
Absolutely, it is, and that's why I was thrilled to be invited. So thank you so much.
Yeah, and I know you have more stories, so there's a chance we're gonna do this again. We might get some partners in crime to join us that have some stories.
Great.
As well. But Steve, thanks so much for being on the show. The Talk North Podcast Network is where we're at. You can download these podcasts wherever you get yours, whether it be Apple, whether it be Spotify, or any sort of that thing. You can do that as well. Propane, the environmentally friendly energy for everyone, has brought it to you. Brianne, a lot of fun again today.
Certainly was. I'll see you on the next one.
Done deal. We look forward to that. This is called My First Concert. Dave Lee here. Talk to you next time. We'll